Tonight on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, we have the guys from Spin Chicago celebrating their one-year anniversary party and a little ping pong live in studio. We also have Taryn Singh Brar with his April 15th Trump rally. We also have the great Danny Murphy from Mighty Vine for Chat and Chew Summer Tomatoes in Winter with Jeff Tierney, CEO and founder of Moonlighting, and author Adam Selzer. And now, to enjoy your Tuesday even more, here is Patty Vasquez.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Still recovering from that Blackhawks loss. It was, it's always, you know, when you go in overtime, right? The whole game is neck and neck. They get tied, and you're like, okay, overtime, we're good. We got this. And then it's over so quickly. It's, I don't know, it's a little gut wrenching. So I've recovered from that. Before I got to the station tonight, I actually had the pleasure of seeing Odisseo by Cavalier, which is the amazing equestrian acrobatic spectacle. I mean, it is magical. The surprises, they really interweave technology and physical strength, the beauty of horses and their performances. It just was a wonderful evening. Thank you to our friends at Odisseo by Cavalier. And we are looking forward to having them in studio next week. But tonight we have such a great show. We have so many wonderful guests on the show. I want to thank everyone for kind of hanging loose a little bit because we weren't quite sure what time the show would start. And joining me right now in studio is a friend of the show who we had on a few weeks ago. We have in studio Taryn Singh Brar. Thank you so much. And, you know, it was funny because I knew right away when I saw you in the lobby, I was like, right, tax day's coming up. And there's been, the charge, the call to have President Trump share his taxes has gotten louder. And actually on a state level, in the state of Illinois, there's legislation demanding that public servants share their taxes. So, Taryn, tell me how the planning is going for the protests. And come closer to your microphone so we can hear your wonderful voice.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, tough loss with the Blackhawks there. So 11 days from now, April 15th, Saturday, we're planning the tax march, and we're going to start gathering at 11 a.m. We're waiting for our final permit authorizations from Daly Plaza, but we've spoken to the police and transportation departments, and they seem to be good with what we're proposing, a route from Daly Plaza to across the river from Trump Tower. And we just recently crossed 10,000 confirmed protesters on Facebook, 26,000 interested, for a total of 36,000.
And when you coordinate with the city of Chicago, with the police department, what are those conversations like?
Interesting.
What do you mean? I mean, is it a little tense? Is it a
sure.
little? Well, they tell you what you can and can't do. They really want to make sure that this stays civil. And for the protests that I have seen, that we have shot some video that we have observed, it seems as though for the most part there is a lot of coordination between those who have organized the protest and the police department.
Yeah.
So they've been sort of terse conversations.
I would say they've been comprehensive and good and
okay.
productive.
Oh, wonderful. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
And a lot of back and forth, I would imagine. What your intentions are?
Lots.
Yes.
Yeah, that's some of the more interesting things. And there's a lot of areas where there could be miscommunications, but I've insisted on meeting face-to-face with police commander of the relevant area, and he's been helpful.
Is that your term or his term? The relevant area. I want my band name to be called Relevant Area. Because it can be kind of, that's sort of specific and non-descriptive. Both at the same time.
I'm trying not to name names.
Relevant area. What's your relevant area? Wouldn't you like to know?
Ooh.
Ooh. Esmeralda, do you have a relevant area?
All of it's relevant.
I like that. There you go. So you're coordinating with the city of Chicago. People are, you can find out more information on Facebook.
Yeah.
And what kind of conversations are you getting? You know, what do people, you know, they're demanding the taxes, but I'm guessing that a lot of people also have other issues that they want to make sure are brought to light.
Yeah. There's a very broad range of issues. And we decided to focus on tax returns because in the atmosphere we're in, there's a lot of partisan political polarization. And I was familiar with the polling before I decided to start this protest here in Chicago that stated that 3/4 of Americans, according to two polls, one CNN, one Washington Post, want to see his tax returns, including half of his own voters. So That's one of the last remaining nonpartisan issues, and I think it's one worth exploring. And beyond that, we welcome all other issues, including tax fairness. And
oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree with that. And what, for you, why is it so important that President Trump shares his taxes, his tax returns, and information?
I think it's important that we protest right now, because I think civic society and the freedoms we are given and the independent thinking and press we are given demand the people to stand up at times. And, you know, releasing tax returns is a democratic tradition and norm that dates back all the way to Nixon. Even Nixon released his. And, President Trump can flout that, but we want to show him, no, the public is not on his side.
And a lot of people would say, you know, Donald Trump is doing a lot of things that are different, that, you know, really shaking things up. And so because he's not doing things the way other politicians have, this is also one of the elements of that. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I think that's a valid question. The way I look at it is, you know, what kind of change do you want? Do you want good change or bad change? Or do you want to shake things up in a good way, or do you want to shake things up just to destroy things? And that's, so I always ask, in what direction, in what way?
And because I think some people would say, you know, some people really seem to have said, I don't care, I just want it to be different.
Yeah, right.
And that seems to be another position as well.
Absolutely. And
just change for the sake of change.
Absolutely. And he has his stalwart defenders. And they are estimated to be about 1/5 or 20% of the eligible American adult voting population.
Right. So that's a significant part of the population that was heard at the polling. You know, those who did not vote were not heard at all. And we don't know where they stand on things. And also, in addition to organizing this parade, again, it's on the date and information about where people can go to get that.
On Facebook, you can go to Tax March Chicago. That's three words, Tax March Chicago. And we're in over 135 cities internationally, and locally we're going to have thousands on the street April 15th, 11 a.m. We plan on starting to gather at Daly Plaza. We're waiting for final permit authorization, so please check our Facebook page at Tax March Chicago.
And you also are involved. You have a documentary that you've been working on. Tell us a little bit about that before you go, because I'm so proud and intrigued with what you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. That's really kind of you. Yeah, I'm doing a documentary film on the physicist Charles Townes, who invented the laser, helped land man on the moon, discovered the black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. And it's about his quest to understand our universe through science and religion, which he believed are converging.
Because that's also another very interesting topic, not just interesting, but it's so relevant right now, the conversations that we're having, whether it's textbooks or legislation. I mean, it runs the gamut of how impactful science and religion are in our lives. Yeah. And we do need to find that balance, not just with ourselves and how we approach science and religion, but how we are talking to each other, what we find important. You know, my son wears a shirt that says science over opinion, right? And that's not about religion, but people take it that way. Right.
Absolutely.
And everyone's taking it so much personally, as though your opinion is your identity. And we need to find a way to distance ourselves and go, this is what I believe. Oh, and there's something somebody else believes. But when you talk about this, what was his name? Townsend?
Charles Townes.
Charles Townes?
Yeah, Townes.
I'm sorry. You can tell.
Townes.
NES. All right. So I think that we should learn more from those who've studied, who've done the work, put the time in. And I look forward to your documentary. How far along are you?
I've done a few years worth of work. And I'm probably going to be finished within the next 9 months. I've spent the last 2 months on Tax Smart Chicago rather than my film.
You've been working on that. Well, speaking of religion and science, we have our friends from Mighty Vine with tomatoes in the green room. Hang out and have some more tomatoes if you'd like.
Thank you.
And again, we've been talking to Tehran Singhbar. And am I saying your name all correctly? Because I like to make sure.
Yeah.
All right, then. You're not just nodding and smiling because
no.
You want me to move on. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And just today, I was talking to my husband about how I need to get out in the garden and make sure I plant some tomatoes. And then, like magic, as though I put it in the universe, and also I knew he was going to be here, Danny Murphy from Mighty Vine brought in some of the most spectacular tomatoes I've ever put in my mouth.
Well, we're trying to solve that problem.
So good. That is so, what is happening? Okay, so how are we having summer tomatoes right now? Because those are summer tomatoes.
Well, we can't grow them in our backyard. in the Midwest.
Right.
So we had to build a greenhouse so we could grow local tomatoes.
Oh my God.
And provide them to the Chicago market.
I have such a big crush on you right now. Don't tell my husband, okay? Go ahead. Sorry, go ahead. You built it. Yes, you've done this. You've made tomatoes. Summer tomatoes happen in Chicago in summer locally. Go ahead.
We're focusing on taste and quality and being able to let our tomatoes fully ripen on the vine and get them to the market in hours, not weeks, is really important for us.
Yes.
Instead of when they come from California or Mexico, they have to be picked early. Instead, for us, we're really focusing on quality, taste, getting that deep red color and that beautiful sweet taste.
Well, and the smell, like there's a beautiful smell to these that you don't get with all the tomatoes that you bring home from the grocery store.
Absolutely.
Sometimes from the farmer's market, but even then. No, these are crazy. Now, what kind of tomatoes did you bring in? Because there's some small. Are those cherry tomatoes?
Those are cherry tomatoes. So those are our signature tomatoes. Our seed name is called Robinho, and our larger variety is called Roterno. So it's a TOV tomato on the vine, which you'll find bulk in your grocery store.
Okay.
Mighty Vine, we're in Whole Foods and Jewel Osco.
And these are, and this is the thing too. When you go to those stores, they now have whole sections. This is the great thing that's emerged in grocery stores is to tell you what's local. So I'm sorry, continue. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, absolutely. I think you know Whole Foods especially does a great job for us in advertising and messaging our tomatoes as local. And for the people and the consumer, they really want that. And it's hard to find that in the Midwest this time of year.
And so the glass houses that you have in, this is in Rochelle, Illinois.
Correct.
But how far is that from the Chicago area?
It's just 80 miles straight west of the city, a little south of Rockford.
And this is, now how long has Mighty Vine been doing this?
Not long. We built our first 7.5 acres in 2015. Mm-hmm. And our first harvest was in October of 2015. And then we actually doubled in size and grew to 15 acres total in 2016. So we average around 700,000 pounds of tomatoes every month.
And where do you guys distribute to? All over the Midwest?
Mainly the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, I'm guessing we're big consumers of the tomato. Don't you think, Teron?
We would.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It was delicious.
Yeah, that's amazing. Go ahead. I'm going to send you home. You can have a package of tomatoes. I'll let you have some. It's your birthday. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Danny.
We would never be able to supply all of Chicago.
Well, you're a portion of it.
A very small portion. But we're looking to neighboring cities and states as well. Mm-hmm. Michigan, Wisconsin, Indiana and Iowa, and a little bit into Minnesota as well.
And are you, the grocery stores that you're involved with around the ones that we know in Chicagoland, but people can hear us all over the country, by the way. We're in 38 states in Canada. So,
oh, wow.
So some of the other grocery stores are also Hy-Vee and Plum, Sam's. What, I've never heard of Sendix.
Sendix is a Wisconsin-based chain.
Okay.
So
hi, Wisconsin. They're listening.
Hey, Wisconsin. It's more of a Milwaukee-based chain.
Okay.
Hy-Vee is more of an Iowa-based chain. They have a few stores in Illinois. Whole Foods is just the Midwest region, so it's just basically Illinois, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, and a little bit of Minneapolis.
So when you see Mighty Vine in your grocery store, you know where it's coming from Rochelle, and because we don't always look at the packaging. We don't always look, you know, that it's coming from California or Mexico, right?
Correct. It's tough. It's hard when you walk into a grocery store and you see 12 different SKUs of tomatoes.
Right.
And how do you know which one's which and where they're coming from? It can get a little challenging, to say the least.
No kidding. But this is, and it's, there is something wonderful about knowing. Teron, do you ever do that? Take a look and see what's grown locally, where something is made.
It usually makes a difference in the type of beer I buy at minimum.
Does it really? It's just, yeah, you like to go local. There you go.
Yeah.
And how did Mighty Vine come into being? What was the idea behind this concept?
Well, we actually started a local food distribution company first that actually sources food from farms all over the Midwest and then sells to restaurants in Chicago. So the tough part about that company was finding local produce during the harsh winter months in Chicago. So what better way than to produce and grow tomatoes ourselves to provide not only just some of the finest restaurants and chefs an opportunity to have a fresh local tomato year-round, but also to supply it to some of the best retailers throughout the Midwest and let the consumer have it as well.
And this is a really, and I see that there's a gentleman that says our third generation grower. So is this a family-owned company?
It sort of is. Uh-huh. However, that picture is of Nick Helderman. He's our COO. He's actually a third generation tomato grower from Holland. So we have Dutch partners who actually have 140 acres under glass.
Okay.
All in one location, growing all tomatoes. So we have the same technology and actually the same seeds as well, because they own the rights to their seeds.
Hello.
So we're the only grower of either varietal in the United States, which is kind of neat.
That's fantastic. And where can people find out more information about Mighty Vine?
Online, mightyvine.com. You can check out our Instagram and Facebook as well, and Twitter.
Excellent. Now let me ask you about you, Danny. Where are you from originally?
I'm originally from the North Shore of Chicago. Moved away for college and lived in California for about 8 years. And then
and found out that tomatoes are good year-round, and that made you angry? And you said, I'm going to work with tomatoes when
absolutely.
You get a chance.
Why can't we have what California has here in Chicago?
Can you do avocados next for me, please? I need avocados. I need year-round good avocados.
Yeah,
I can't find those. Yeah, California found that out. So you were in California for a while and ended up back here.
And then moved back. So my father actually is the chairman of Mighty Vine and co-founder of Local Foods. Mm-hmm. So he kind of was able to direct me back here and helped me be a part of this company. And I actually had the opportunity to go to the Netherlands for a year and work in a greenhouse every day and learn the business through and through over there.
Well, I'm so glad to have met you and learn more about Mighty Vine. And we'd love to have you back in studio sometime and talk more about this incredible
absolutely.
Business. It's really, I love that there are year-round tomatoes about 80 miles from Chicago.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This is something everyone should be. Take a look at your labels when you're at the grocery store, Mighty Vine, and all over the Chicagoland area. Danny, pleasure to meet you. And again, look forward to seeing you again.
Likewise.
Soon.
Thank you.
More after this on 720 WGN. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love. Homegrown tomatoes. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, and really thrilled to welcome Jeff Tenery, who is the CEO and founder of Moonlighting. I just told him right before we went on the air that I've been having conversations with a lot of people, both on the air and in Springfield, with our legislators about how do we figure out what to do next when it comes to work. My husband was a vice president at a corporate communications office that went from 214 employees in 2008 to 11. And he was one of the people, one of the first to be let go. And we, you know, we've been trying to figure out different ways of, like, what does that mean now, right? How, what do you do next? And what, Jeff, tell me where Moonlighting came from.
Well, it came from really when the market crashed back in 2008 and everybody was scrambling for jobs.
Was it really in 2008?
Absolutely. I didn't start it. Took me a few years.
Okay.
But really wanted to help people get on their feet, mm-hmm. because you can't rely on corporate America anymore for employment. So mm-hmm. even, I think a lot of the numbers are a bit, you know, fumbled a bit here, and whether you believe there's really unemployment's going down, there's still a lot of people unemployed or underemployed. So, it's, you know,
sure.
wages have not gone up in 20 years. So you've seen a huge earnings gap. And so what we try to do with Moonlighting, we try to fill that gap with the gig economy. It's emerging so fast. People can freelance. They can create jobs right from their mobile phone. And that was really the inspiration for the company.
So when you say they can gig, you know, that they can, that there's a freedom to that, who can gig?
Well, you know what? Uber started this revolution a few years ago where, hey, listen, let's get people driving, right, and making money on the side that way, not to mention disrupting the whole cab industry, right?
Yes.
So, but people want to do more than drive. They have different skills, right? We have everything from fire jugglers to accountants. We have everything from face painting and, you know, ice cream truck drivers trying to get party gigs to, you know, your attorneys or, you know, web designers. So it really, it's wide ranging. And so the gig economy affords all of these, you know, basically everybody to be able to work whenever they want to work because of mobile technology.
And work. And I mean, the most important thing is to work. It's one thing to think, because I think a lot of people feel like, well, I'm not really, there's nothing that I can do. That, like, I saw a piece that you guys did about consulting and what your value is and how to price yourself and
sure.
things like that. And people don't know because, you know, they're very good at one thing, but maybe marketing themselves or branding themselves is overwhelming and daunting.
That's exactly. That's why we use the term powering the business of you. People, there's two things that they don't know how to do when they want to start their own company or their own freelance job. They don't know how to find clients or let clients know that they're in business, right?
Yeah.
They might be working from their kitchen table, their, you know, the breakfast nook or a coffee shop. People don't know they're available to be hired. So that's number one. And number two is how to get paid. So that's the other big piece of it, is how do they ask to get paid? How do they invoice? How do they handle the accounting side? So we merge those two worlds together very easily so that people can moonlight. And right. really when we were inspired in the company to do that, take 9-to-5 people and try to, you know, spawn and push them out into becoming their own independent entrepreneurs. And that's really where this whole came together. That's how we built it for ourselves so that we could do it ourselves. We were cheating. We were moonlighting ourselves.
Oh, really? Yeah, absolutely. Who were you moonlighting from?
We were moonlighting from other companies. A couple of my friends were working in the banking industry and financial businesses, and I was working in mobile technology. But we were working nights and weekends, and we were investing in ourselves. And that's really what we were inspired by.
And that had to have informed the way you developed this, too, working in the mobile industry. How long were you working in mobile?
I've been in mobile for 30 years. I helped build the first wireless networks in the New York, New Jersey area. So I am definitely, you can't see it, but the gray hair, father of five.
I would not have guessed 30 years. Yeah. I mean, like you might be a little silver, but you know, there's no way.
Yeah. So I was born into the mobile business and that's really all I've ever known. And so I was, back in 2008, I made the decision I was going to start a company. Now it took me a few years to do it, but I wanted to do something that was big and that used mobile to help connect people very quickly.
Can I ask what mobile companies you've worked for?
Yeah, I worked for Verizon and AT&T, and then what were all the sub companies? And if you remember the names of all the, the Bell Atlantics and the Baby Bells and all the other sub companies, but I was around back then when they were all broken up and now they're all back together again.
Well, and you mentioned Uber and I mean, like, do you in your wildest dreams ever think that it would go from, let's get people the ability to take their phone with them, to be reachable all the time, and where we are today?
No. We were worried about just being able to make connections with calls, right?
Right.
Like tin cans and string, right? Connecting that type of voice connections. Now it's nobody talks to each other. Everybody is communicating through text and chat and all sorts of ways. And so, but the big thing too is now people are paying each other through the mobile devices and they're connecting in ways that we never really imagined.
And that's what's so great about moonlighting is that you can find, here's a destination where people who, they want to know where they fit in now.
That's right.
That's really, I think, the big piece for a lot of people in the country. Globally, even, because it is a global economy. There are things everywhere. Are there opportunities to do work from home as a freelancer?
In fact, one of our biggest, fastest growing segments, we call them the Moonlighting Mom, a mobile optimized mother. So we got cute with the acronym. But that's connecting where moms wanted to work from home, take care of the homestead, but also use it to try to get things done as well. So we see moms promoting their own businesses, working from home, and then turning around and hiring somebody to walk the dog or clean the gutters and do really manage the home. And that's really, that's one of our fastest growing segments.
I love what you're doing. So I love that you have everything from as you mentioned, fired jugglers to attorneys and all, because there's a place for everyone here. And that's, again, something that people are searching for.
And it's, there's a lot of niches and verticals, but there's not something that has this mass canvas, this open canvas where you can really express yourself and personalize how you want to work. And that's really what we did. We have 400,000 people across the U.S. now that are available to be hired on demand. We've grown really since last year. We've grown from, we crossed 100,000 last year in June, and so we just crossed 400,000, so we're growing very rapidly.
And where are you based out of?
We're in Virginia, just outside of the University of Virginia, a little town called Charlottesville, Virginia. It's tiny, 100,000 people.
All right, and why did you choose Virginia?
That was really just where, we wanted to raise. I'm a father of five, I should mention, as well. So we have a large family, and we wanted to move to a college town to raise the children. And it's a great, college town to start businesses as well.
Oh, that's a smart idea, too, because you have a built-in community where there's always art and education.
And really, all the college graduates coming out now are really thinking more entrepreneurial and starting their own business or being a freelancer, way different than my generation, where it was all about the 9-to-5 job.
Yes.
You're going to work at a big corporation. You're going to work for 30 years, get the gold watch, retirement down to Florida. And the whole mindset of a millennial is, I can do everything from a mobile device. I do everything on demand. So putting those two worlds together for us really was the inspiration to try to get moonlighting, really to help millennials get off the ground and also help us, who need, college education bills, filled. We needed other ways to make money instead of just waiting around for one paycheck. It's not about one paycheck anymore. I know you do multiple things. You do radio, you do TV. It's all about having multiple income sources coming in.
Well, when you mentioned that too, for people who do moonlight, if they go to moonlighting, there is so much information here too, as far as how to create an invoice, how to propose, let someone know what you do and how you can help their company. There's also the idea of you give them guidance on how to prepare their taxes even as self-employed. Because when I do a 1099, there have been years when I've had 36, 37 1099s. I don't even go to an accountant because I know how much they'll charge me. That's right. I will type all that in myself.
Buy the 1099.
That's right. Yeah, they do.
Sure, of course. And that's really, and there's so many ways for you to try to figure out ways to get income. And so when you look around the world, the world's changing so dramatically on how, where you can get your income from, and it's not about one source anymore. It's really about multiple sources, especially in the entertainment business and other, all sorts of businesses that you're looking at.
So that's what I love. How do you work with companies? Because that's who you have to also provide, you know, information to them and partner people.
So here, companies are looking again because they don't have permission. A lot of these HR departments don't have permission to hire full-time anymore, right? Because everything's about corporate earnings and being able to make your profit. So they're allowed, though, to hire consultants and hire people, you know, that are considered contingency.
It's okay. You and I talk quickly. We'll both take a breath.
I think one of those things where, so we help those companies that are looking to hire someone, and it's almost like a test balloon. They can hire someone, try them out for a few months, and if it works out, they could extend a full-time offer. So we do see a lot of that transition from part-time to full-time with people, you know, hiring off of moonlighting.
And when you talk to people who have maybe not had work for a while, because you mentioned the unemployment rates and whether or not that is a true representation of whether people are working or not, people often talk about underemployed or they talk about people who gave up looking. And this seems like a way to get back into the workforce. If someone's been out of work for a while, they didn't, you know, really, because they were searching for that full-time job. They were in that mindset of, I lost this job, now I've got to find another full-time with benefits. Is there a way to also help them back into the workplace?
That's exactly right. And as we're looking to partner with different organizations that are trying to do that, just helping people get back on their feet again. Mm-hmm. And they're doing all sorts of, you know, social work to do so, but they don't have the tools. And you need tools, because one of the things I use the term, we want to teach people how to fish, not just, you know, hand them the fish.
Right.
So if you teach them, and so really moonlighting is trying to teach people how to moonlight, how to build a bridge or gateway to a new career, a new lifestyle. People are talented. They just really need opportunity. And I think that's really, you need a platform for that. And that's what moonlighting does.
And people also really need to sit down and go, whether it's on a piece of paper or in front of a laptop. And, you know, is there a way to, like, you know, catalog, like, what I'm good at, what I think I would like to do? Do you help people in that sense as well?
We do. But I tell you, what's most interesting when the profiles on moonlighting is people list a wide variety of jobs. On LinkedIn, you know, we wanted to be a cooler, hipper LinkedIn because we didn't think people would use that in the freelance world. So people list a wide variety of skills, and you'd be surprised that while you might have accounting skills, there might be other types of things. You might teach guitar. You might be able to, you know, again,
I mean, think of that. Yeah.
I know, but wide variety. Well, you've been doing this very successfully for years. You have a wide variety of entertaining skills and communication skills and putting those to work. So great writers can write, but they can also maybe playwright. They could do other types of business. And that's really the inspiration and what we want to do. And like, we want to empower people to be able to look at all of their skills. So it's very diverse, the skills that we have on our profiles.
I love the concept behind this. Do you mind if I open this up to like texters and phone calls if anyone has any questions?
That would be fantastic. And I'd love to.
312-981-7200 if you have any questions for our guest, Jeff Tenery, who is the CEO and founder of Moonlighting, putting people together with, you know, with what their inner talents are and how they can get back to work or find other sources of income for themselves. And I also want to find out how people get started when they go to your website, what they're going to find out.
Sure.
Quick break. More with Jeff Tenery when we come back on 720 WGN. That's right. We're talking about working. Getting back to work or finding something that you enjoy doing. We are talking to Jeff Tenery, who is the CEO and founder of Moonlighting. You can go to moonlighting.com and find out more. I want to find out how people get started. Before we get to that, though, we have a listener who wanted to join the conversation. Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Good morning, Patty.
Good morning. What's going on?
I had to say, I listened to you a couple weeks ago. You were talking to, I think it was Rick Hay. I found that very interesting. The super nutrition guy, the vitamin guy.
Right. I'm glad you enjoyed it. What do you want to tell Jeff? Uh-huh.
Go ahead. You asked me a question.
Yes, you were calling about a question or a comment for Jeff Tenery, our guest. Yes.
I just was telling Mike that I worked for a company. I started with them in 1994. We went from 35 employees to just over 200. Uh-huh. Right after 2000, right after the millennium.
Right.
And mm-hmm. then went from 273 back down to 35 in about 3 years. So it was the big roller coaster.
Right.
Up and down.
How did you weather that, Nick?
How did I?
Yes.
I ended up starting my own company, a consulting business, but that's where I ended up. Before I turned into the person I am today.
It sounds like you're pretty happy where you are. Is that the case?
As a guy once said, I used to work with love and life.
There you go.
Well, I tell you, that's something that's really inspirational, because you didn't let the bad chips and fall the wrong way, is that you decided to do something about it and to build your own career. And that's really what, you know, there's not as many people are as brave as you, Nick, to do that. And so what we're hoping to do with Moonlighting is get people to not be afraid that they can start their own job and really have a starting point, a Kickstarter, to get their own business going. So it sounds like you are an inspiration and kind of did not let things sit and made your own destiny.
Thank you so much for that call, Nick. And how do people get started when they kind of think they want to go and do something different? They don't know what they're capable of. What do they do when they get to moonlighting.com?
Well, you know, we wanted the experience to be like what, you know, billions of people are doing by the second, which is posting on Facebook, LinkedIn, or Twitter. So we made Moonlighting look and feel a lot like those social media networks. So it's really simple. You just go in and post something. I'm really good at painting. I'm really good at designing, whatever it may be, and posting it just like you would on social media. So it takes, you know, less than 30 seconds. You could attach pictures. You could write, wax poetic and put that all out there and then immediately shoot that out across the internet. We also, the reason why I was in Chicago is we have a really great relationship with the Tribune, Chicago Tribune. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with them to help them push Moonlighting in front of more of their audience, because there's so many people that are looking for work and looking to hire.
Right.
So it really is the idea of, like, how can we put you in front of the biggest audience possible so they can hire you?
And what are some of the important elements of, you know, approaching this bridge to independence, which is one of the things you want to help people with? What's an important element in working in that direction?
I would say you have to have, no fear. I think that's really the thing that we overcome the most with Moonlighting.
I was telling myself that today. Right. I have to become fearless, and I feel like that's been holding that. And I want to be undeniable. Those are my two things.
Yeah,
be undeniable and be fearless.
We're working on a reality series right now that's going to showcase the people getting over that fear. Like the people that are like, hey, just kind of dabbling a little bit, and they kind of jump in and they're scared. And then all of a sudden there's really some good like rags to riches stories that can come together because people overcome that fear. So I think what Moonlighting does is it feels safe. It feels like what you are naturally doing on a daily basis, which is staring at your mobile phone when you wake up, right? You know, getting out of bed and using that as a vehicle to be able to let the world know that you're open for business.
What kind of fears are people expressing to you?
I would say just that first point of like, I don't know if anyone's going to hire me. And I think that's the point of like, well, they can't hire you unless you tell them what you can do and showcase that and put yourself out there a little bit. It's kind of like dating, right?
It's actually how we met, isn't it? I put myself out there. I emailed you and said, would you have any interest in doing, you know, being a part of the show, whether a partnership or collaboration? And I was, and you were very open. I mean, that's an interesting thing that you responded in such a positive way. Cause I did, I sent out emails to different companies, just like things that I found interesting that I knew I could talk about. But your response was the most positive that I've gotten. So it's fascinating to me that you're eager to learn and find out what someone's all about and see, you know, how you can help each other.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, we have 400,000 people that have given us their hearts and right their fears and they're opening up to us. It's almost like the profiles that we see are very personal, right? And they actually hit us emotionally, like people needing to make rent or save for college for their children. And so it means a lot to us. That's what we do all day. We just try to figure out how we can connect to people. And so the more people that we let know about it, so thank you for having me on, is that it's going to make good for all the people of Chicago. And really all the markets, we're in, you know, all 50 states, top markets, and it's growing really quickly. You know, literally 1,000 people a day are coming in.
Is this a website or also an app?
Actually, we started out as an app only, believe it or not. So we have moonlighting.com,
I can download the app. I don't know why I don't have it on my phone already.
Yeah, we've been as high as number 4 in the app store in the job postings category. So we've been featured by Apple a few times. And then really just we've been called the Swiss Army knife of the gig economy by Forbes recently. So we're getting all these accolades.
What a great compliment.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we're pushing the boundaries of, you know, how to get people work. We're disrupting, you know, the way people look at the classifieds, which is why we're partnering with, you know, great companies like Chicago Tribune to try to kind of help resurrect that classified feel, that community feel that you did in the past. And so that's what we're doing now.
And you mentioned that some of the fears that people have, because I interrupted you, but you were saying that people are afraid of being told no. How do you tell someone if that's the worst thing that can happen to you? I mean, like, okay, fine, they say no, and then what? right?
Well, actually, that, I'll be honest with you. There's some people who can't get over that. And so we do sometimes hear people say, hey, listen, I didn't get, you didn't promise, because we don't promise jobs.
Right.
That's the one thing we're very clear. We don't guarantee you're going to get a job because there's no guarantees in life. What we do is we give you all the tools and we work really hard to push people your way so that you do get leads, you get new clients. And believe it or not, sometimes I've had people actually call up to cancel on moonlighting. Just, and we're like, oh, we're sorry you didn't get any leads or you didn't get any new clients. They're like, no, I got way too many. And it's almost the
it's overwhelming.
It's the fear of success, too. It's like, oh, my God, I have a 9-to-5 job. I don't know if I want to, I don't know if I really want to do this. And so there's that security blanket, I think, of falling back to 9-to-5 that we're trying to overcome and break that barrier and let people know, like, you know, why not do both?
Yeah.
Really, there's nothing wrong with moonlighting.
I agree. And now you're also writing a book. What are you going to be talking about in your book?
Yeah.
That's a big undertaking.
It is. And I'm kind of like halfway through it. It's much harder than I ever thought. I haven't done it before. I've always said I would, but I'm breaking down and doing it finally. But it's called The 41st Hour. And I have this concept that I believe, you know, most companies are trying to get the most out of their employees and they ask them to work overtime all the time. And so the old 40-hour work week, I think, is a misnomer. It's kind of gone.
Especially with email.
Yes. Yeah, so like you're always on, you're laying in bed, laptop, right, doing all that. So what I'm saying is that people should take that 41st hour of every week and reinvest it back in themselves. So find that passion, find the different job that you could build for yourself because it's a better earnings opportunity for you because you're not going to get, you know, you hope you're going to get a little bonus at the end of the year. You hope you get the little merit increase that they give you. And those are just not enough and they're not commensurate with how much time and effort you did to work overtime. So I want people to reinvest, not so much for my business or moonlighting. It's you just need to do that for yourself. And that might be maybe something non-monetary. It could be something like I like to go mountain biking. I like to go volunteer in charity and do things that make you a better person. And that could include working. So the 41st hours really should be kind of retaken and recaptured and reclaimed by the American worker.
And well, it's valuable information people have for them to have because we don't know how to value ourselves. We don't know how to say I'm worth more than what is being offered to me right now. And, you know, both with the book that you're writing and moonlighting, this is a move in the direction of like, what do I want to do next? What am I capable of and what's out there for me and how do I go after it?
Yeah, you just mentioned pricing. There's a bet. The leverage of the American worker versus the company is really imbalanced right now. It's very unfair. That's why the wages haven't gone up. But if you had more people wanting to hire you, that creates leverage. It's like free agency in baseball or any sport. You now have leverage, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah. No, know what you're worth and let people know. And again, that's why I go towards the idea of being undeniable, right? Is that is people can, because we get into this sort of mindset and you know, we're sort of in this cycle of this is what I'm doing. This is what I've always done. This is what I'm going. And the other thing that I've been trying to talk about with people is that we decide like at 19 or 21 or 25 what we're going to do. And sometimes we almost feel like, well, if I didn't succeed at that, then that was all I was supposed to do, or it's too late for me. You probably get a lot of people in their 40s, 50s, 60s who are finding that there is a place for them and they can restart their lives.
There's a woman in Miami that's a great moonlighter and she's been great to work with us. And she had a regular kind of 9-to-5 job, but she always loved weddings and she wanted to be at a wedding officiant. So she kind of took up some studies around that, got her kind of preaching degree, you know, did all that. And now she's a wedding officiant in Miami. Her name is Kat.
Hi, Kat.
She is killing it, and she's doing great because she's doing what she loves. And that's really, if you find out, that's the best. They always said to you, your parents always said to you, just find something you're passionate about, and you'll always be successful. There's so many people stuck. And so if we can unlock that and get more people thinking like Kat to become the wedding officiant, I think you're in good shape.
Absolutely brilliant. So people can download Moonlighting. They can also go to moonlighting.com where you have a lot of stuff that you've written. Now, are you putting a lot of this in the... do you feel like when you write the blog, you're like, oh, I also need to be writing my book and how much of this can I put in the book?
I'm lifting some of that too. So yeah,
but you're not lifting. I mean, like the blog is sort of a shorthand of it and then the book will be the expanded version of it. You know, it's sort of like your cliff notes or your footnotes to it.
That's
so
right.
You're not lifting. Do not sell yourself short on that. Jeff, it's been a pleasure. I'm so glad that you happened to be coming through Chicago, and I look forward to meeting with you again.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And if you have anything that comes up, feel free to let us know. We can have you on the phone as well from Virginia.
Yeah. If you need anything, think about moonlighting.com and the gig economy. We're there.
Excellent. Oh, well, I'm going to download the app because I need to get some gigs too. I mean, I love being here, but I am passionate about, we talked off the air about my company With Kind Words and talking to educators and the medical profession about how to talk to a family on one of the worst days of their lives, whether it's finding out that your child child has a disability that will change the path of your life, or maybe you have a family member who has got a diagnosis. And you know, a lot of times doctors will say they're never going to walk again. They may never talk again. And never is an impossible place to live. And that's not just true when it comes to a medical diagnosis, but it's also true when it comes to your life, to your path, to your career. So what you do really is astounding. So thank you so much for creating this company.
And thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. That's Jeff Tannery. Go to moonlighting.com or download the app Moonlighting. It is time now for our news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNradio.com. Coming up after the news, we have Adam Selzer, who has a new book out. And you know, he's always got some really cool, creepy stuff to tell us about.
Paperback Writer.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. By the way, on Michigan Avenue, there's a motorist who has been pulled over by the Chicago Police Department. And I've asked Mike if there's any way we could call CPD and tell them the lights are distracting for me.
Oh, another one just pulled up.
Is there no? Oh, no, they've sent more vehicles. Okay.
You know, I called 911 and they sounded very confused when I was asking that question.
Yeah. Could you have them tone down the lights a little bit? Are they listening to the show?
Oh my gosh, they're huge fans. Tell them we have tomatoes.
Thank you. I don't know if that was on purpose or not, but they just turned the lights on. Okay, I can see again. I was getting a little bit, my eyes, I couldn't focus anymore. Adam Selzer joined us in studio, and I can focus on him. Congratulations on the release of your latest book about, what's the name of this, H.H. Holmes book?
H.H. Holmes, The True History of the White City Devil. This is the first really comprehensive biography of this guy. We've come to advertise him as America's first known serial killer. It's a good advertising term anyway.
Is he really the first known serial killer?
Not even the first in Chicago, really.
but so then why the first?
Fairly early. It's just how he's come to be advertised over the years. It kind of depends on what you count as a serial killer and what you don't. And that's one of those things where for every expert, there is an equal but opposite expert.
So as an expert on H.H. Holmes, and for those who are not experts, who are perhaps not as well-versed, or maybe don't even know, believe it or not,
oh, sure, yeah,
there are people who have never heard of H.H. Holmes.
So H.H. Holmes was a gentleman of questionable demeanor, let's say, who came to Chicago in the mid-1880s after he got out of medical school. Already had one wife in New Hampshire, then he married another one in Chicago, a couple others over the course of his career, too. He was married to three or four women at a time.
Busy gentleman. All right.
Busy gentleman. The ladies seemed to love the guy despite the fact that a doctor who examined him said in the Journal of the American Medical Association that his sexual organs were unusually small.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe that wasn't a thing of worth at the time.
Right.
Wrong.
All right, so 1893, he went to one of his partners, a guy named Ben Peitzel, and said, Ben, here's what we're going to do now. We're going to go to Philadelphia and fake your death. We're going to get a dead body that looks like you, then we'll say that it was you, take the life insurance money, live like kings. And having been working with Holmes for quite a while, you'd think Peitzel would have known better than this.
Okay.
But Holmes just killed him, then took the life insurance money and started traveling around the country with three of his children. A couple of months later, the insurance company put two and two together.
Yeah, so, go ahead.
They had him arrested. The kids were no longer in his custody at the time. He said, oh, they've gone off with this woman, Minnie Williams, to London. They're all just fine. Several months later, they started finding the kids' bodies.
Oh,
and remembered
my
that
God.
This guy had a building in Chicago that was supposed to be full of hidden rooms that he was using to hide stolen furniture. And for a few weeks, they just dug up this entire building down on the south side that they now called the Holmes Castle. Found hidden rooms, hidden chambers. And it kind of got out of control. There's a couple of days where they're like, we found a rope. He must have been hanging people. Or we found a bench. Maybe that was a dissection table, which is kind of how this thing entered folklore. We now got this this tall tale, really, of this funhouse the guy supposedly had on the south side that he was supposedly using to kill any number of victims. Really, the number of people he killed there is probably in the range of about 5.
Okay.
But people like to say it was around Halloween, it can go up to 1,000.
Well, and it's been sensationalized in fictional stories as well.
Oh, yeah, it started being right away. But the thing is that newspapers very quickly figured out, oh, no, that's just dye on the rope, not blood. Or they figured out, oh, this guy who said he's buying dead bodies to sell his articulated skeletons to medical schools is drunk and will say pretty much anything. But the out-of-town papers didn't always pick up the second half of that story. They'd pick up the part about they found blood on a rope, but not the part where it turned out to be dye.
This is where skimming is really not the best idea.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing of like how we react to the media and what we remember from sensational stories over the years.
Man.
When it came back in the story came back into public consciousness with like 1940s pulp articles, they forgot a lot of the stuff that had been explained away at the time. And then when it came back again in the last 10 years or so, we've added a whole other layers of fictional elements to it. So it's a fascinating little tall tale, but like all the best tall tales, there's a kernel of truth behind it.
Wow, it's remarkable. And how did you go through all the research? What elements? I mean, obviously, you mentioned the newspapers. Mm-hmm. What resources are available for one to
The trick with the
examine?
Newspapers is getting the right ones. So mm-hmm. The story takes place in a lot of different places. He operated in Chicago. He was in prison in Philadelphia. He was in St. Louis for a while. Getting the stuff from those particular cities, the several different papers that were operating in Chicago all sent people into this building, the Castle Building, and they got just unfettered access to go digging around in the place to interview all of his neighbors and stuff.
Okay.
But you can only get that in the Chicago papers. Meanwhile, Philadelphia was stealing letters out of his cell to publish in the newspapers. They were interviewing him. They were following the trial carefully. It's a matter of getting all of the papers from a given city and trying to trace all of the stories back to their earliest version. Also, here in Chicago, the legal archives. This guy got sued a lot.
Wow.
He was a swindler first and foremost. He was always buying stuff on credit and then never paying for it. I found at least 60 lawsuits in Chicago that he was the center of.
Wow. That's and a busy guy.
Yeah, the legal archives. You go in for the first day you're there. It's just microfilm index of all of the different lawsuits. But then after you write them down, they'll go send to the offsite warehouse. A couple of weeks later, you come back, and sometimes it's just a few pages. But other times, it's like boxes and boxes of crumbling Victorian paperwork. It's fascinating to go digging through. The handwriting is atrocious sometimes.
And what did you learn? You know, you were mentioning a little bit about the journalism and the legal aspect of it. How about the like forensic police work? What was that like at the time?
Very bad. It was a couple of years before. At the time, they could still find bones and argue about whether they were human bones or animal bones, and nobody could really establish one way or the other. A couple of years later, that started to change.
Okay.
But at this time, you know, they had a hard time proving that that was blood and not dye.
Okay, right. So, wait, as far as their technology, that would be lagging.
Yeah, lagging, not to mention the Chicago police today probably have the best reputation they ever did. For what that's worth. I mean, they at the time...
Corruption or...
That too, yeah. Corruption, incompetence, and everything else. I mean, at the time, they had a new police chief at the time of the Holmes investigation, a guy named John J. Badenoch.
Mm-hmm.
3 months before, his job had been selling flour and feed. He had no legal training, no experience in the police force, no experience in law enforcement, no law training, nothing that would suggest that this guy would possibly be a good police chief. But the new mayor liked the cut of his jib.
Okay.
So he became the chief of police despite having absolutely zero experience for this sort of thing.
Wow. This is unbelievable. Now, your book has come out today.
Yep.
Well, technically Tuesday.
Tuesday.
It's now Wednesday, but I mean, I haven't gone to bed yet, so it's not necessarily Wednesday yet. But where can people find your book?
Hopefully wherever books are sold. I haven't been to the stores yet, so you never know when your books come out where it's actually going to be.
Okay.
Sometimes I'm kind of surprised by this. But yeah, if you go to mysterioschicago.com, that'll have links to all of the major bookstores. You can order it from your favorite local bookstore, of course, at the first place to go.
Excellent. Do you mind hanging out for a little bit? We have to do an interview with some folks from Spin.
Oh, cool.
And then we'll be back with Adam Selzer.
Is that a ping pong club?
That's a ping pong club.
All right.
Exactly.
Cool.
Or maybe possibly table tennis. We'll find out from them.
We will.
More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late, and I'm excited to welcome our guests in studio tonight. There is a ping pong social club in Chicago. That is just such a fun thing to say. I'm so excited. They even brought me a whole bucket of ping pongs. Listen to that. Ping pong balls. Hello. In studio with us, we have Henry Jimenez, who is the director of Grand Openings Operations and Development. That's what it says on the piece of paper, by the way, Henry. If you have anyone to take that up with, it's not me. Someone else wrote that.
It's a long title.
It is a long title. That's all the titles. And we also have with us Ryan Sweeney, who is the marketing manager of Spin Chicago. So, Henry, does that mean that you travel all over with these events? Can you come closer to your microphone? I know that that it seems like we're being casual, but you got to talk right in there.
Well, right now my focus is on Chicago.
Okay.
And then the next one will be Philly and Austin.
Oh, that's a fun whirlwind tour right there.
Yeah.
Where is your home out of?
Here.
Are you from Chicago originally?
Now I am.
No, that's, I don't know how you could originally now be from here, but
no,
we'll
I'm
take
from
it.
New York originally.
And how long have you been here?
Going on a year.
Going on a year? And how do you like it compared to New York?
I love it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that.
But she said compared to New York. You want to compare
it
to New
York? He didn't love it.
I
didn't say
I love the people of Chicago. If I could take Chicago, the people of Chicago, and move it to like Long Beach, California.
I see what you're saying.
Be perfect.
Yeah, but we wouldn't be who we are then. I mean, like, part of our character is having to go through this. I'm guessing you're saying the seasons of politics, of sports, and the traffic.
Yes,
all of those things. But that's what makes us who we are.
Yeah.
And then we wouldn't be that way in Long Beach. We'd be so laid back and chill, you know, and different things would matter to us. So that's part of our character. Brian, where are you from originally?
So I grew up in the northern suburbs at Gurnee, Illinois, Wisconsin border.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Up north?
Yeah.
Up by there?
Yeah. But still north side enough, far north side to be a big Cubs fan. So season's starting.
Isn't it weird that there are children now? Like, in the last year, there are babies that have been born that just never know what we went through for our entire lives.
It's good.
It's a good feeling. It really is. Don't you think I'm right, though, that part of our character is that we have this attitude in Chicago? Like, if something goes wrong, Henry, we're kind of like, yeah, that seems about right.
Chicago's work. It's a good city.
It is.
We don't brag too much. We don't do any of that. So it's a lot of work, but it's good.
Well, and that must be, I have to imagine the people that come out to Spin, which is the ping pong social club that we're here to celebrate, your 1 year anniversary. I'm guessing the crowds, I mean, there's something about being a kid too when you're playing ping pong. There's something very sort of almost like day camp. It reminds me of day camp. That's like the two things I learned how to do in day camp were play pool. What day camp did I go to, Mike? I played pool and ping pong were the two things I learned how to play.
It's really interesting watching people walk into that club, even people who have never picked up a paddle before, and like, oh, I don't play ping pong. And then they grab a paddle and the smile on their face and they just start playing. And then the people who have played ping pong want to teach them, so they start teaching them. It's rather cool to watch. It's a ton of fun.
Oh, I can imagine. Ed, were you a big ping pong player when you were young?
I mean, same thing. I had a ping pong table in my best friend's house, my grandparents' house. So, you know, I would go back and forth a little bit. But, you know, not a ton.
Okay.
But now since I've been with Spin, yeah, ping pong is happening all the time.
All the time. Do you sleep hearing ping pong balls? You hear this noise a lot?
It's really unfortunate. Yeah.
We all do.
Yeah. It drives my girlfriend crazy.
Henry, were you a big ping pong player?
I had about the same experience as Ryan.
Yeah.
Basically in school and back in the day, I grew up on Long Island, so you would see a ping pong table in a garage.
Okay.
So, or down in the basement.
Sure.
And you basically, our ping pong was basically, you incorporated the walls and the ceiling as part of it as well. So it was a little bit radical.
So are you guys, do you get competitive now that you are around ping pong all the time?
Oh, yeah.
Are you learning how to like spin and give it a little bit of, I don't know what you do. I don't know what the
all
special
of it.
Skills
I mean,
are.
It's a big competition, you know, among the people who work here. We have a new app coming out actually this Thursday where you'll be able to record your scores, keep track. You can be ranked globally. It's going to be really cool. And right now within our company, I'm ranked number one. Just saying.
What?
Yeah, basically facilitates his ego.
Yeah.
That's what
great.
It does.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
What? Now I'm looking down at this, at some of the information you have. So tell me about the ping pong mobile app that you have.
Yeah. So that's what we're talking about. Basically this app.
I know, I know you mentioned it, but I'm like, wait, what is going to happen with this?
Okay. So if you were to create a profile, right, you log in. And then you can challenge someone through it. You can even challenge a total stranger. It kind of uses mapping to see where a stranger's at. You can pick which spin club you want to go to play them, pick the time. So then you go and play. You record who won or you lost. And then it ranks everybody.
Oh, my God.
And there's rankings within cities. And then there's ranking on a worldwide level, too.
And when do you have, like, the worldwide ping pong off? It's probably not
TBD,
the best way to phrase
TBD,
that.
We'll get back to you on
that. Oh, you're going to be doing that?
Yeah.
I can imagine.
But it's really just a way for anyone who plays ping pong, doesn't have to be at Spin or anywhere. It's just for any ping pong lovers can use this app, keep track of games, create groups with their friends, compete within that group. It's really, really cool.
It was basically created to part of Spin's, I guess, personalities to connect people.
Right.
So we wanted to find a way to connect people when they're not just playing competitively in tournament, but also when they're going for social reasons.
So just to hang out.
Yeah. They can even talk smack on it. They can actually message each other.
You can message each other, yeah.
So
which is cool.
You have a local aspect, but then you go global as well. So if you're traveling to another spin somewhere else, you can actually contact that person and compete. And he does it all the time. That's why he plays too much ping pong, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I get in trouble sometimes, yeah.
During work, you just
That's why he's so good.
Where's Ryan?
You shouldn't say this on the air. National might be listening.
Yeah. We'll edit that, I promise. So when, say someone's out and about in Chicago and they're like, what should we do tonight? And someone says, hey, isn't there a ping pong? And they ping pong place and they Google it, they find Spin, because that's the number one ping pong destination in Chicago. How do they arrange for a table? Should they call ahead? Do they just pop in? What's the best way to find Spin?
Well, it's actually pretty laid back and easy. You can just walk in, or if it's a weekend, we recommend you call and make a reservation so you don't have to wait as long.
Exactly.
We're pretty busy.
That's what I was thinking.
Mm-hmm. But weekdays, it's pretty cool. I would recommend calling because we are huge with events, and we do have a lot of companies have actually taken well to us and love coming there, so they'll book the space for team building. So that kind of that makes you a little bit more in demand. But I would definitely recommend calling. But you can walk in, and we have over 22 tables, and they're all out. So we have a lot to offer.
And is there a kitchen? Is there food, or is it mostly?
Oh, the food's amazing.
Oh,
yeah.
Great food, craft cocktails, great beer selection, good wine list. It's amazing.
Well, I love the idea of playing ping pong and having nice dinner and drinks with friends, hanging out. But also, how much is the ping pong? Is it affected by the alcohol consumption? I would also think confidence.
How much are you ping ponging and how much are you drinking? I don't know. What are we talking about?
But I also think people probably get more confident. Like, you kind of start out, you're a little bit, maybe a little sticky, maybe feeling a little fuzzy as far as your ping pong skills.
Yeah, loosens them up. It's good.
It's kind of a nice way to get into it.
Yeah, cocktail in one hand and a paddle in the other is
perfect.
Normal.
Exactly. I love that image. Now, you guys, as much as you are connecting people with each other and getting people to be social, you're also donating ping pong tables to schools and youth programs.
Yeah, we're really, really excited about that. New York has been doing this for years, and as this is our first year here, what we do is we take the used ping pong tables, which are fantastic top-of-the-line tables, and we picked 15 different Chicago public schools and also Chicago Park District, and we're donating those tables to the kids.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's so much fun. It's something we're going to do every year, because we want to really push the ping pong revolution. We want to give ping pong to the people.
Uh-oh, you guys are organizing a revolution?
Yeah.
It'll be televised.
All about balls.
It's all about balls? Is that what you said?
All the time.
I think so. Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense to me.
Yeah, in addition to that, we're actually busing in 100 kids from CPS schools on Thursday afternoon as a little field trip. For them to come play. So we're pretty excited about that, too.
That's a lot of fun. I want to come hang out at one of those.
Come on over. It'll be a blast.
I want an adult field trip to Spin. That's what I know. I can do that on the weekends, but still, like a busload of friends or people that you don't even know.
Mm-hmm. It's in the evening.
It's in the evening. Yeah. That's the field trip is in the evening. Let's take a break here, and I want to play a little bit of ping pong while we're taking a break. And, teach me some of your mad skills there, Ryan.
Let's do it.
All right, let's get that done. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening pretty late and really having so much fun in the Allstate Showcase studio. Spin is celebrating their one-year anniversary here in Chicago. And to give us more information about what Spin is and how they're going to celebrate is Henry Jimenez and Ryan Sweeney. And we just played a round of ping pong. And first of all, it's a smaller table. So thank you so much for bringing in it's a starter table almost, isn't it?
Yeah, you got some good game, Patty. You were good.
I don't know about that, but I had that one shot. I just had that corner shot. That was the only one I could do over and over again. But there were a couple times you were spiking it at me. It's fine.
Yeah, I had to bring in a little bit. It was good. Henry had some good shots, too.
Yes, he did.
He brought it.
Yeah, I saw a couple of right across that, right over the top of the net, and zip off the table.
Working on my game to beat Ryan in the future.
And in the future, I get the feeling that you're just, in the middle of the night, you're just like strategizing, trying to figure out what his weaknesses are.
I hate to lose.
I don't blame you. Although Ryan seems like a very charitable winner.
I'm a humble man.
You are a very humble man. Now, are you competing in you're having a celebrity tournament coming up for your celebration?
Yeah, we're really excited about that. So Thursday night for Spin One, our one-year anniversary party, we have a celebrity ping pong tournament. I'm not competing, but we have some really cool folks who are. And actually, Patty, this is the first time we're announcing this to the public is on your show.
On my show.
Who's playing?
Dun, dun, yeah. Dun.
So let's give you the rundown. We have your good friend, Bill Leff, from WGN Radio.
Everybody look out. He is competitive.
I'm excited to see it. I've heard stories.
Me too.
It'll be really good. We've got Eric Zachary, who's a DJ over at Kiss FM playing. We have two players from the Chicago Fire soccer team. Zhao Mira, I believe is how you pronounce his name, and then David Akam.
Great.
And then one of my favorites, I actually lived out in New Orleans for quite a few years. We have Pierre Thomas coming in, who's a Super Bowl champion of the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. And then we have three very special players. We have Gumby, Stay Puft Marshmallow Man,
what?
And a slice of Chicago pizza, who will all be playing in the celebrity
battle
as well.
I want to see those warm-ups.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, what kind of rehearsals are going on for that? Some practice going on?
That's a lot of hard work to get them signed up.
Yeah,
that's
really
okay.
Was.
So Gumby, Stay Puft, and a slice of Chicago, is it Chicago-style pizza or thin crust, I'm guessing?
Well,
it's hard to, deep dish can't really move around as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, it's tough. He's a little slow. He didn't make the cut.
No, yeah. I would imagine. That's so much fun. And what else is going to be happening at the tournament?
So the tournament's going to be fun. We have this whole tournament going on, and then we have a great live band playing. Brooke and the Nice Things is playing. We have live art going on, so we actually have a really cool street artist, Corey Jenkins, who's going to be painting a ping pong table throughout the evening, which will be a ton of fun. And yeah, it's just going to be a really, really great night.
And this is on Thursday night, April 6th?
Thursday night, yeah, April 6th. You can RSVP through our website. It's a free party, and it starts at 7 o'clock.
And tell everybody where you're located so they know how to find you.
344 North State Street.
344 yep. North State Street. You have a full kitchen, a great bar, craft beers. And you're doing great things for the students and all the kids in the city of Chicago, which is so much fun. I love that.
Yeah, we're really excited about that.
The cool thing about the artists is also we're going to auction that table off.
That's what I was wondering. I was going to ask you what happens to that table that they're painting.
Yeah, so that table is going to be auctioned off that night, and it's going to go to a really cool program to help inner city kids. So we're really excited about that.
Now, when you talk to the kids, you know, do you say table tennis or do you say ping pong? I'm just curious about that because I like, are we trying to educate a new generation as to calling it table tennis?
It's a good question.
Oh, it's. I feel as though I've struck a nerve as far as the language corporate language.
I think we have to be true to ourselves, and we are a ping pong social club.
Right.
So we're supporting World Tennis, which also we should speak about as well. Mm-hmm. So World Tennis Day, which is the Federation for World Tennis created this program.
World Table Tennis.
Yeah. It's too long for me. But basically, it's to promote table tennis, and it's been around for 3 years now, right?
Yeah, it's been around for a few years. So it's really cool. So World Table Tennis Day is actually April 6th.
Okay.
So it's another part of what we're doing. And World Table Tennis Day, there's over 200 events in 42 different countries, and we happen to be one of those events here in Chicago. And then also Spin New York and Spin San Francisco are also hosting events, too, for World Table Tennis Day.
So I'm guessing that Spin Mobile App is going to go crazy on Thursday with World Table Tennis Day.
Yeah,
I hope so.
Yeah, this is the week we're first announcing the app, too, so there's just so much going on, and we're really, really excited.
We have someone there to educate the kids, not Ryan and myself, because we'll say ping pong, probably.
And then you get in trouble, and someone will come over, the table tennis police.
Saying ping pong sounds cooler.
It is.
Right?
They're fun words. Play ping pong.
Table tennis is the original term, and we'll have one of our pros there to actually educate the kids when they're there and talk about table tennis. So I think I know it's going to be a great event.
And one of the things that's pointed out in the information you guys brought with you is that table tennis is a great way to build not only social skills, but also teamwork and connecting with each other.
It has health benefits too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the adrenaline, there's something about that adrenaline, because I'm guessing that's what you really enjoy, Ryan, when you're competing, is a little bit of that jolt.
It is. You know, it's the whole thing with sports and really any activity with friends. You know, I mean, you remember being a kid and whether it was throwing a football around with your friends or playing baseball or ping pong, whatever it was, you know, you had so much fun doing it. You were super into it. And that's what we want to give to the kids. You know, we want to teach them this new game that a lot of them might not have access to. And, you know, hopefully it'll stick with them for a while.
Well, and also, you know, it's a way to build something that they can do socially as they get older. And for, you know, because you have a lot of adults coming to it now at Spin and finding something rather than, it's great to go hang out with your friends and just talk or, you know, there's a lot of video game places, but that's such a solitary individual thing. And this is a great way to have stories to tell and, you know, build relationships in a way that we haven't probably in a long time.
That's, you just touched a real big point about Spin. It's connecting, but it's also unplugged.
Right.
So that's the cool part about it. It's not, you're not on a video game, you put your phone down, and you're actually teaching not just children, actually. We get a lot of adults who come on dates, and they get to socialize, and it breaks the ice.
Right. And it also, but it helps you focus too, because you're connecting, you know, physically and mentally, because, you know, you're in it. You know, you might have a lot of distractions, but there's something about table tennis, ping pong, whatever you want to call it, that challenges you in fun ways that keeps it really light. You know what we have coming up in July is the Wounded Warrior Games. So I want to figure out a way to bring a lot of the men and women that are coming in from all over the country to maybe come play some table tennis at Spin. That would be really fun.
That would be really cool. We actually had an event for Veterans Day where we brought in a bunch of folks. So that's a war game. Let's do it.
I mean, even if it's just like, you know, casually, because I met a lot of them down at Fort Bliss. So I think a lot of the men and women would have just like on one of their nights off, because they're going to be here for quite a while. So there are going to be events all over Chicago. The Warrior Games are coming June 30th through July 8th, and they're going to be like at Navy Pier, but like a nice, fun, competitive thing for inter sports, because a lot of them won't be doing like, it's going to be, you know, men against men and that kind of women against women or volleyball. But I think that we should have like one night.
We should talk about that. Yeah. I think that's a great opportunity.
I want to bring Spin and the Wounded Warriors together, because you guys really do so much for the community, everything that you're doing for CPS and the Chicago Park District. Because I grew up in the city, and it is something that you remember, the connections that you make, the companies that seem to care are the companies that you know that you're like, this is something, this had an impact on my life, this was something that I enjoyed doing. Not obviously you're not going to reach every kid, but the ones that you do, that's what a great benefit, what a great return to the community. Mm-hmm. I love that. Where did that desire come from? Is that something that was that from the beginning of
that
Spin?
That started in New York, and actually, yeah, it started with the original founders of Spin, and that was a program that they thought would be very helpful. They were all artists and finding out their careers, and they remember what it was like to actually start out. So that started in New York, and part of it was, we aren't going to put together just a business.
Right. Oh, that's great. Well, it's wonderful to know that was something that was built in sort of in the DNA of the company.
Like eight, 9 years ago.
Yeah.
It's going to get stronger, too, as we grow.
Well, Henry, if you need a partner to help you practice so that you can overtake Ryan's number one ranking on the mobile app. And by the way, before we go, I want to make sure people know how to first download the app. They go to the Google Play Store and iTunes and that kind of thing?
It's really simple. Go to your app store. Just type in Spin, mm-hmm. United by Ping Pong. It'll pop right up.
Excellent. And then your celebration on April 6th?
Just go to wearespin.com. Mm-hmm. Click through to Chicago. And then you'll see the whole informational page on it in the events tab.
And you guys everyone can also follow you on Twitter at We Are Spin, and your Facebook page is facebook.com/SpinChicago.
Yep.
And again, the tell everybody the address so we can make sure people know where to find
344 you. North State Street.
Excellent. So we wish Bill the very best, and I know that you're cheering. Maybe you're cheering for somebody else, but we're cheering for Bill.
I don't know.
Love.
Gumby might take down Bill.
Oh, I don't know. I kind of want to see the Stay Puft Marshmallow take him down.
Yeah. I'm pulling for the pizza slice.
Well, happy anniversary, you guys, and thank you so much for letting me play ping pong during the show. That was a lot of fun.
You can come by and play again, right?
Oh, absolutely. You can count on that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah. Tell me something good. Tell me that you like it, yeah. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are winding down. Nick D is up next. I want to thank everyone for tuning in and all the amazing guests we've had in the studio. We want to thank Jeff Tenery of Moonlighting. Download that app and see what possibilities are out there. We want to thank Taran Singbar from the he is the organizer of Chicago's Trump Tax Day protest. You can go online, find out more about that on their Facebook page. We want to thank the guys from Spin. And our friend Danny from Mighty Vine Tomatoes. We've been eating tomatoes voraciously in the studio, Esmeralda. Are you a tomato person?
I love tomatoes.
I will bring you up some tomatoes to take home with you. Because they were very gracious and generous with the amount of tomatoes they brought in studio. Check those out. We're at the grocery store. Look for Mighty Vine. They're so good. Adam Selzer.
They are delicious tomatoes.
Yeah, you've been enjoying some of those
as
well.
I do. Tomatoes make me fart, but still.
Wow. Really?
Just so you
How
know.
Do you yeah. think you're on the first it's, floor and I'm on the seventh?
This is true.
and here I am, just sort of in a small space with him. And that's, you know what? That's okay. I'll eat some of the fudge stripes and I'll just soothe myself with chocolate. Do you have? Do you find that's the case? Do you know what makes you pass gas?
Or this is the one food I know of that does it for me.
You know that you know specific. I don't know that I can track things. Mike, do you feel that you have a good enough handle on the things that specifically give you gas?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, this was a very disheartening time in my life when I had a malt from Oberweis one night and found out that I was lactose intolerant. Yeah, when I was 23 years old, I remember the date. It was a very sad day.
Oh no, I did not know that you were lactose intolerant.
I am. Well, I fight through it sometimes. I have some lactate, and I'll never give up ice cream. So, but still, yeah, it's a sad day when you find that out.
If you're out for Sundays with Mike Heidemann, just you stay for the dessert, leave for the gas.
Buckle up.
Just buckle up. Adam Selzer, I feel badly that I was tell us something good, and then it was
with the fart jokes.
Esmeralda, do you know what gives you? I mean, obviously for me, it's the traditional, the beans and such.
I don't know. I know some things, you know, make my tummy happy, like fast food.
Okay.
Specifically White Castle. I mean, I think that's everybody.
I know, but it's so
tempting. McDonald's.
Morning McDonald's?
Yeah, because a few hours later, I'm like, oh, why'd I do that? Oh, but it was so good.
Oh, boy. Well, now I feel like I have to track it a little bit. How about that?
There should be an app for that, really.
Oh, my God, right?
I think we just came up with our million-dollar idea.
What would you call that? Pass the Gas app?
Oh, yeah, that's a good name for it.
There should be like a Fitbit.
Yeah,
right.
With a little smell-o-meter on it.
Oh my God!
It'd be useful if you know you want to hold one in for a certain point at a certain time.
The first scratch and sniff app.
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe not.
I don't know.
The scratch anyway.
It sniffs for you. You don't have to sniff what it does. Okay. I blame myself. This is entirely on me. None of you were involved.
True. Totally
in
my
the
fault.
Trajectory.
I brought up the
you did.
Yeah,
you know what?
It was on me.
I take it back. He did mention that tomatoes make him pass gas.
Yeah, well, I put out an academic history book. I feel like I got to keep my middle school street cred going on here, you know.
Well, it is kind of sad that when you sneeze people bless you. But if you pass gas, they don't want to have anything to do.
Fart and you stand alone.
It's right. But yeah, I mean, because people wish you goodwill when you have an involuntary bodily function, with just a sneeze. You know, burp is often, you know, if you're not discreet about it, is looked down upon as well. I mean, we all have
In some circles, maybe.
See, I have funkier burps.
Do you? You chunky burping?
Oh, man. Sometimes I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, I'll blow it to the side.
Right.
People are like, what are you doing? I'm like, it just really smells. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're the only one, Esmeralda. I think we all have that moment of it comes from a place you didn't even know existed at your very core.
Yeah, I was like, what's been hiding?
Yes. Like, what collection of leftover madness is going on down there? I agree. It's like, what? And when you say that, I call it, my husband and I call them chunky. It's
yum.
Makes sense.
Do you ever cycle through what you ate earlier that day, and you're like, okay, that's a little bit of the old linguine.
That's why we need the app.
That's why we need the app. What made that happen? You're right. I think that we need to track that digestive process. I don't know.
I got the name for the app.
What's the name for the app?
What's crappin' in?
Yeah, that's a little more.
And then you get what's his face from What's Happening?
Yes. Right, to do the dance.
Yeah,
do the dance and everything.
It's all coming together.
Yeah. I kind of want to do the dance. Do you see me sort of jump in my chair?
Cha-ching.
I this is really a sad lead into the great day that you're having, Adam Selzer,
yeah.
The release of your book, which happened prior to your tomato consumption,
right,
and possibly the passing of gas.
Sure.
Okay. So. You have many books. How many in the
about,
line of books
about
you've written?
20 now.
20 books.
Yeah.
You've written, I know that Play Me Backwards is,
yep,
a, and also...
Just Kill Me.
Mm-hmm.
Is another recent one.
Which features one host named Patty Vasquez,
there
a producer.
There is a producer named Patty Vasquez. A producer named Craig from your old producer. And
yes.
Also a radio host named Patty Vasquez. And also the woman in traffic.
Yes.
Gets name checked a bit.
Yeah. This one is a historical.
This one is historical.
Tone?
It's really, really more academic than most. There's 30 pages of citations at the back, or somewhere in there.
Yeah, the footnotes are.
I'm pretty proud of the big pile of footnotes at the end of this one.
Where I got this.
Pages and pages. There's a lot of digging to find all of this data.
Okay, so there are two categories of people. Well, there's going to be a lot of categories as far as people who are going to pick up a book about H.H. Holmes.
Right.
So if someone is not familiar with H.H. Holmes, what are they going to encounter?
they're going to encounter a comprehensive biography of the guy.
Of the guy.
Yeah. But also, not just a biography of the guy, but by how of how his story grew into what it became. He's become kind of an American tall tale figure now.
Okay.
And increasingly more so. There's about to be an 8-episode series on the History Channel about him. There's going to be...
Featuring you.
Yeah, I'm on a couple episodes, and I'm a consulting producer on it. I haven't seen it, so I have no idea whether it's any good or not.
But, stand behind it. Yes.
I don't know if I can yet.
All right, then.
We'll find out, I guess. But it was fun to work on anyway. It's been fun. They'll send me like weird challenges, like weird conspiracy theories that they want me to look into and things.
Okay.
And, you know, I love a good challenge. Like, can you find out about this guy that he went to school with and whether he might have visited him in London in 1889? And I was like, no, his friend was in Japan in 1889. And that's fun detective
okay.
work for
that
me.
Is.
Yeah.
That's great work that you did.
Yeah,
on that.
And also suppose and DiCaprio and Scorsese have been talking about making a movie about the guy for quite some time.
Well, you got to get in the mood with those guys and make sure that they have the information from your book. I mean, you
do
need
you have
someone.
Their number?
Do I have their number? Not anymore. No, I don't have their numbers.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. So for people who maybe are familiar with H.H. Holmes, as you mentioned, it's not
right.
just about the biography, but also the mythology that grew from the stories about him. Mm-hmm. There's an aspect of like all that also traces a lot of like the sensationalism in journalism and American history that,
right.
that is specific to this country.
Yeah, I think so too. And how newspapers grew and William Randolph Hearst and all of that. Hearst didn't really get into the Holmes story until right at the end. His name is kind of synonymous with yellow journalism and made up stories these days, which is it's deserving, but it's also not deserving. His papers also did a lot of terrific journalism too.
What is this made up news stories? Is there another way to say that?
I believe there's a phrase going around right now.
What is
that?
That's on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, I just can't think of what it is.
I prefer to. We stumbled on a fake news story last night about a woman who trained squirrels to attack her ex-boyfriend.
I heard about that. Yeah.
It was a fake story.
Oh,
but
man.
I know. Isn't that disappointing
that
to find out that it's
disappointing? Yeah.
Yes. As we were telling it,
I was thinking if she can do it, I can do it. You know? I'm gonna like train them as my unholy army of the knights.
Yes, well,
look out, Mitch McConnell.
There you go. Not that I'm encouraging that kind of behavior with any human being,
of course,
and like the officials. But the story behind it was that not the story behind it, but part of it in the ability her ability to train the squirrels was that she was supposed to be the circus lion tamer, and I probably should have known that was where. No, actually, all of it should have really given me the alarm bell. So, you think, Esmeralda, we were really enjoying that story.
What? There are lion tamers.
Absolutely.
Now, if you're a good lion tamer, does that mean you could train other animals as well? Or is it a very animal-specific kind of thing?
No, I think that because it's a punishment and reward system, I would imagine, when
right.
it comes to training animals.
But,
and for some, just reward, and some just punishment.
Yeah.
So, I think that we were all buying into the idea that it could happen. And then I read the next story, which was that somebody had consumed too much meth and got the munchies and ate a baby. And I was like, maybe this is where I should...
That's an old urban legend about eating the baby.
Yeah, so that's when I started going, I should probably check my sources. But I'd rather do a fake news story that is about a woman training her squirrels
right.
than some of the other things that happened over the last couple of years.
Right. There's been plenty of stuff that I only wish was fake news.
Right. There's so much of that. So you're saying that a lot of the fake journalism, sensationally, like taking an element of truth
well,
and expanding
on it. Well, it's not
even
so much that it was fake. A lot of it is just that we forgot that it was fake. Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, you know, the police would be the new police chief decided that he had solved every unsolved crime of his predecessor's era.
Oh,
and the next, you know, the newspapers would go along for a day, and then the next day they'd say, okay, the police has screwed this one up too. But we don't really remember the second half of that. We remember the wild theories that got shouted around. We don't remember that they got explained away. It's something that we see with a number of different stories where, you know, it comes out, it becomes a 9 days wonder, then it goes underground. And when it comes back from underground, it's got this whole new mythology around it. People forget that it ever got explained away.
Oh, dear. Well, congratulations on the release of your book and congratulations on all the hard work. I know you've been at this for quite a long time.
I've been researching that guy for a long time now, yeah.
And when is the History Channel supposed to air, the H.H. Holmes series?
I believe it starts in 2 weeks on the 18th.
So you'll be back
It's called American Ripper.
I feel like we should have like a viewing party for your show, like in the green room. What? No, you don't want to. Are you because you're too nervous?
I'm nervous. Yeah.
You don't know how it turned out.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I did the same thing. When I had a show on the Oprah Winfrey Network called My Life Is a Joke, and people wanted to have a viewing party for me, and I was like, I don't know what it looks like. So can I tell you this?
Sure.
I wish that I'd had a viewing party.
Okay.
So I'm just saying. I mean, whatever it turns out to be, like you know, because if you're surrounded by your friends. You know, they're there to support you and have
right.
fun no matter what. And if you feel like you need to be consoled, if you feel like that's what you need, they'll be there for that too.
Okay. Also, did you get the money?
Yeah, did you get paid? Oh.
No comment.
No comment.
There was some money. I got some money.
Well, I was going to say bad or whatever. You got paid, so whatever.
You are, you know, recognized as an expert at what you do. So congratulations. That is Adam Selzer's Something. We'll take a quick break and more after this on 720 WGN.